Reggie.
And this is R&B Talks.
Unashamedly.
Unshamed.
That, you know, have you seen that that Duck Dynasty spinoff show with the Robertsons that were called the Unashamed? I Am Unashamed or whatever. Have you seen that?
No,
their little,
I have not.
Their little podcast looking thing they do?
No.
It's pretty interesting. Well, I don't know. I don't watch it very often because, I mean, it just, those guys sit around, they talk about stuff and everything. It's pretty, but it gets, that's kind of cool that they talk about that. But so Brian, look, here's my thing, right? Here's what. So the other day I decided, you know what? I really like my neighbor's property better than mine. And we both have.
Are you going to like.
We both have a.
Are you going to like mount an invasion?
We both. We both have our own flag. And so I go over there and I bring my flag with me and I just kind of, I'm hanging out in this place. I feel good. It feels good. Feel good there. Yeah. Doing okay. I know some of the other guys that have done this have been violent and all that kind of stuff, but I was peaceful. Right. So then here I am. I'm just hanging out in the, so he gets finally, he's like, hey, you shouldn't be here. This is, you know, you're trespassing. This is, you know, you're illegal. Well, I said, well, yeah, I know. Well, I was, you know, I was oppressed and stuff in my old place. So I came over here and, you know, for a better life. Cops calls, you know, the cops come and I lost my, you know, lost my cool, started throwing bricks at them and, lit their cars on fire and, burned the, flag of his that he had, because it was, you know, I was so angry at his.
Whilst efforts. Waving the flag of your oppressed country, I'm assuming.
Well, that's, of like, course.
Oh, okay. All
of
right.
Course. I was running, you know, because I mean, come on now.
Yeah. Okay.
And then I picked up the Palestinian flag too while I was there.
Did you?
Just for fun.
Just have a good time.
Yeah. And then I hired a bunch of other people to come there and protest with me too and riot and destroy his stuff because I so want to be there.
And let me guess, you burn it all because of the big tan man made you feel
Orange
like
man
you
bad.
Needed to burn it all.
Orange man bad. Orange man bad.
Well, we'll say tan man.
Orange man bad.
So you just you know, okay. Did you see my response on your post the other day?
Yeah, I did.
Wackos,
dude.
I have no more energy at all.
I don't.
For crazy people. And here's where we're at. I don't even care about the left. I don't care about the right anymore. I just don't have energy for crazy people.
Here's when you know I'm disinterested. If I just give you a sure, man.
Yeah.
Whatever, dude.
Yeah. Good.
Then, you know, you have left my respect zone.
Yeah. And you're never coming back.
It's not happening.
The wall's up, baby.
It's just not.
The four shields are up.
What's troubling is that I have people I work with that have this different, weird perspective of life. And it's always, and I love how these people who aren't Christians at all, who like actually look down on Christianity, always say, "What's that? That's that with Jesus for you?" Like they're like they have any idea who he is.
Like they have any clue?
No, they're like either atheist or something. Usually the atheists are the worst, but they're like, "Yeah, you so represent Jesus, right?" And you're like, well, "If you don't even know him, so how would you even know, right?"
Yeah.
It just blows me away how these people, it's like, well, would it matter if I did or not? Because, I mean, obviously you think so highly of it. What
right,
moron,
I just want to read this because I read this to somebody at work and they're like, well, that was very passive aggressive. So let's just read my response to your, the dummy that you were talking to on Facebook. I said, Reggie Payne, I peeked in to see what you were talking about, and it's official. The left has lost its mind. Words have meaning. People came from insane poor countries that were falling apart, and now there are people saying that they should hate this one and help it fall apart as well. This utter defiance of common sense just blows my mind. If you hate this country so much, then leave it, like you left the first one. I don't hate anyone, but if we and what we are is so bad and you want to burn it, use that energy to find what you want. Burning it won't change it for the good. Assaulting police and businesses won't change it for the good. So if your immediate desire is to hurt it, you simply don't love it. If you have an ideal place, then go to it. It truly lacks critical thinking on anyone's part to think that destruction of private property and assault amount to anything good. And before anyone blames the president, it was going on before he got involved. Grow up, start realizing that this infantilized behavior is the problem. Sorry, Reg. My advice is to leave the left to self-destruct. They seem to want to watch their legacy of lunacy grow. So save your words and worries for rational people. I've gone beyond a certain point, Reggie. I think they're just crazy. Like, I don't think there is an ideology. Because if you go through everything that you see, there's no cogent, gelling ideology at all. Like, Gavin Newsom got caught lying on television about Trump not reaching out. It was a total lie. They came out with proof. Now Karen Bass, who is the, I guess, the mayor of Los Angeles, is, which we all know was a communist and a Scientologist at one point or another. So, you know, there's some psychotic people. They're just psychotic. It's not Trump derangement syndrome. You're simply mentally ill. And you need help.
Here's what blows my mind, dude. I only trust professional journalism, also negating the Republican or conservative or libertarian professional journalism. They only really what they were saying is they only listen to liberal mainstream media based journalism. When those same liberal based journalism starts saying there's a riot in LA, they say, no, that's not. It's not. Yeah. It's peaceful. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's totally a hypocritical thing. Now, here's what I want to say about all this riot stuff. And I said this before in the last, because it's, for one, it's flipping LA.
Yeah.
LA's a dumpster fire already.
Yeah. That whole state's on fire.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, it doesn't take a genius to look at that and go, okay. Now, the other thing is, why is it that when people go and find the people that are attending these protests, they've been to like six or seven other ones at Kamala and Kamala Harris rallies, and they've been to all the other riots and
stuff. Because they're paid.
And then they go and then here's the groups that are funding these things and all this stuff. Where does all these funds come from, right? Like, it's not, you can find this out. It's not hard. And it's just block. You are an idiot if you're just looking at all this stuff and you're just taking it in and saying these are peaceful protests and you're negating all this stuff. No, you have cop cars that are being on fire. You have vehicles. You have businesses. You have people getting hurt that are just coming to see what's going on, and they're getting hurt.
Yeah.
So no, I don't want to. This, you are an absolute flipping turd monger, and I don't really care. Yeah. I mean, you're insane at that point. You're just negating everything. And I'm tired of being this, well, you should be more respectful. No, you're a moron. Quit it.
Yeah, stop. Your behavior is that of a impetulant, ridiculous child.
Anyway, but
you know what though, Reggie? I rode a unicorn to your house.
Sweet.
I did. And it was a peaceful unicorn. It didn't like stab anybody with its horn, or we talked about calm things.
I'm glad, man. I'm glad. Super glad.
I'm not ashamed of riding my unicorn. I'm not. It's great.
It's
unicorn.
It's just, I don't know. I'm just, I don't care. I really, look, I'm going to offend people no matter what, because I believe in Christ and I try to walk like him. So I'm already going to be offensive to the world as it is.
Yeah.
So I was not built to shy away from the truth or what reality really is. And I don't really care. I think that our whole freaking government, even with Trump in office, is still still a shit show. I'm sorry.
Our government is our government, dude. Our government is. Okay, so sure. We all had a little bit of hope, thought maybe it would be different. It's not.
Well, I don't, look, there's some good things that's happening. I don't think any of those would happen under Kamala Harris. So I'll just say that. Do I think we're better off with the Trump administration? Yes. Do I think it's like this is going to be the solve all our whims and everything else? No. I think we're talking about decades of work that has to continue in a direction in order to get the country back to a situation where the middle class is taken care of, and we're not being taxed to death and everything else. And I mean, you know, so I just don't, I am so skeptical. That's where I'm at. But really though, man, like, I just, it's not really that. It's like the people, that's really where I'm just saying, you are morons. Like, if you're falling for all this nonsense and you can't follow the frickin' just can't follow the trail. It's not that hard. It's clearly
math.
Out there.
It's not hard math.
It's guys. Not.
It's not hard math.
And just the, and it, even if you just bear it down to the ideology of one of that particular party, like you have you're radically pro-abortion, you're radically racial incentivized, which means you're racist, you're radically Marxist, you're radically socialist. All those things don't work. And so that's what you're doing when you're throwing up these flags of your Democrat party or whatever, or your ideology of the woke nonsense. No. And I'm sorry, but that's what you are. You're just a sheep that's following all these stupid Marxist tendencies, and it's right out of the playbook of what every other freaking regime that's turned communist or tried to has gone through, including Nazi Germany.
Yes.
So anyway, we've
talked. To go on to something more powerful.
What?
They're dropping bombs in Iran. And
dude, India. I know. I saw that, man. That's well, I mean.
Well, I kind of feel like in like a nanny nanny boo boo kind of style, Netanyahu was warning Trump the whole time. Either get nuclear weapons away from Iran, or I'm going to go bomb Iran. And Trump kept saying, "Oh, I'll make a deal." And then Netanyahu just got tired of waiting. And then he said, "You know what? If you're not going to get rid of them, I'll get rid of them." And unfortunately, we're going to get dragged into the middle of it because, of course, we are the world's peacekeeper for whatever ridiculous reason. And it's just going to be, there's going to be a lot of innocent people that die in this, man. A lot of innocent folks are going to die in this.
Yeah. I mean, I know, dude, but Iran is not our friend.
They're not. They're not anybody's friend.
And there's a lot of things to say about that, the Middle East and everything else that goes on. It's highly, highly just chaotic. I mean, just the way it is. And you have these jihad and everything else going on. I mean, it's crazy, dude. You still have persecution of Christians out just at an amazing rate in parts of the Middle East. You know, so look, it's a powder keg that biblically it's supposed to be anyway. So,
yeah, I mean, but still, I mean, yeah, it just sucks that all it's those, tough to see. There's a lot of kids and innocent women and people that are going to die because of this.
Oh yeah.
And there's just, it's just this, it's just, you know, when I think about Iran and I think about their leadership, they're led by a gang of crazy people. And Netanyahu, man, he's going to do whatever he has to do to protect Israel, whatever he has to do. And unfortunately, I think he felt like he had to fire some rockets, and now there's retaliation. But I will say this, and I said something about this the other night. I think that this is Putin's like fever dream, like, because the onus is off of Russia right now, and it wouldn't surprise me if Russia tried to take the Ukraine right now. Because he knows that America's eyes are off of them. He knows that they're not really paying attention right now. It wouldn't surprise me if he tried to pull something.
Yeah. I don't know, man. It's an interesting, we'll have to see what happens. I mean,
yeah.
Obviously the situation is going to develop, you know.
Yeah.
And we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
Now we're filming this on the Friday the 13th.
It's weird that we did that right at the same time,
but you know, but that's okay. That's because great minds think alike.
I know.
But we'll see. I anticipate over the weekend we'll see a bunch of other things. Also, over the weekend is Father's Day, which is kind of a silly holiday in itself. But I always found, you know, my Father's Days when I finally became one were always the days I had to really be a dad, like. They were all the most trying, the most sacrificial that I had to be was on Father's Day. That was how it ended up for a long time.
Dude, I'll be honest with you. I don't see. I appreciate what my children and my wife do for me on Father's Day. But I don't. I guess I don't see it different than any other day. I just don't.
Well, it's really, I mean, yeah, because all these things are just. it's interesting, I guess. If you're not honoring your mother and father every other day, why then what does one day to honor your mother, father on father? What is that really going to do?
Every day should be the day.
Yeah, I mean, you know, right. I mean, it's one of those things, but you know, it gives my daughters something, you know, that's the thing. I mean, like 8 and 9 years old. So, I mean, you know, they look forward to that kind of thing. And it's like, okay. So it's really like for them, you know, it's like, hey, what do you, I say, you know, I told both of my kids, I'm like, hey, what do you want to do with me on, you know, Father's Day? I mean, you know, I let them kind of tell me what they want to do, you know, and kind of roll with it as that way, you know, and my, you know, my son is a dad now too. So I don't know, you know, it's, that's a whole different thing to have your kid be a dad and have that.
Yeah.
the weird. Sure. But anyway, yeah, that's going on. But
now you got to have granddaddy's day.
Papaw.
Papaw.
That's day. What I am. Papaw.
You're Papaw?
No, I'm Papaw.
You're Papaw. You're not Pappy?
No. Papaw.
Papaw Dan'l.
I used to call my grandpa on my dad's side was Papaw. And then my grandson's, I guess. My son's baby's mama. Her dad, she had a papaw. So she was like, hey, you want to be called papaw? And I'm like, yeah, let's go. Anyway, men's mental health month. We mentioned this before is in June. And part of what we've come up with is kind of a 3-episode series here on some topics for, specifically around some things that is important. So, and that's the reason why this one's called, you know, Breaking the Shame Cycle.
Yeah.
Because for a lot of guys, dude, dealing with shame is that can lead to all kinds of messed up places.
Well, and a lot of shame results in aberrant behavior, right? Aberrant behavior is not something that, you know, men have a lot of natural tendencies, and in a lot of those natural tendencies, we are made to be shamed. Men are naturally physical creatures, so we're shamed for that. Men are naturally, I don't want to say aggressive, because I don't necessarily think that every man is hyper-aggressive, but our masculinity is shamed. When men are men of faith, we are shamed. We're seen as weak because we believe in something more powerful than ourselves. I mean, it comes from so many different angles. And especially Christian men carry a lot of shame because here's the thing I don't understand about the differential that's made between Christian men and regular men. We're the same. There's only one difference. We found our salvation. We face the same trials, tribulations, temptations that every regular man faces. We are Christians because of what we choose to believe and because of our salvation. That doesn't make us not human. Right. So, you know, when people go, well, you have been, you know, I get here all the time. Well, you must feel fine. You've been saved. No. I have shame and I sin and I do things against God all the time. And but the difference is I have the ability to go to him and be like, Lord, forgive me. And he does. Right. He forgives me and I can let that shame go. But what I've noticed with a lot of Christian men is they'll tell you that they've let the shame go, but they're really just kind of tamping that down and hiding it. Why do you think that is?
I think it's because it's a difficult thing to come to grips with and to trust other men to even approach. Right. Because we are still biologically trying to be alpha, mm-hmm. even and especially around other men. I mean, you know, even though we may not be like as direct about that, and it may not even be a conscious thing we're doing, but it's part of our DNA is to like be competitive with the other men in the room, in the community, and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, we're looking to be the top dog. Just innately in as part of our biology, right?
Yeah.
And so anything that could lead to someone knocking that down a notch, is probably is a thing, you know.
Considered a threat.
Yeah. I mean, you're like, hey, that could really, you know.
That could really hurt my reputation. That could really make me look weak in the eyes of my family. It could really affect my marriage. It could really affect my standing in business. I mean, there's a lot of things that we worry about with that.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, especially if it's something that you're, I would say is not even known. Like if it's not, I think the worst things aren't necessarily the like injuries or things that we've occurred that are kind of obvious. I think it's the deep rooted shame stuff where we feel inadequate about a certain part of our existence, or like, you know, whether it be like, or maybe you just really have a problem with your self-image, or because I mean
maybe you have a financial issue, yeah, right? There's a lot of shame with that.
There's a lot of we always kind of point to women when we talk about image issues, but no, men deal with this a lot too. Like, it's a big thing for men to deal with their own image and their own.
Dude, I've lost 90 plus pounds. And when I look in the mirror, I see the same 90 pound heavier guy that I was before I started.
Yeah, it's tough, dude.
That's what drives me, right? Is to keep on going. Is that I still see that guy in the mirror when I look in the mirror. I don't see a different guy, you know?
Well, I mean, you know, I sort of do the same thing is with, but I'm looking at back at when I was really fit and I'm like, man, I'm not that guy no more. But I don't know. I really don't think I have a problem with it. You know, like it doesn't bother me at this point in my life anyway.
I'll openly admit that I fear going back to being heavier.
Well, I hear you. And I'm working out and everything just to, but
no, but for me personally, there's something in me. And I know we shouldn't be driven by fear, right?
Yeah, you don't want to get back to that.
But I look at that guy and I'm ashamed of how I was out of control. Like it wasn't like I was a naturally heavy guy. I was eating like a wild animal. I was, you know, not taking care of myself at all. You know, I was just shoveling garbage into my body. So yeah. So tell me something, Reggie, what's the difference between guilt and shame? That's a very interesting question. What is the difference between guilt and shame?
I think shame is more rooted around your identity, right? And maybe guilt's more about your behavior.
I think that shame follows guilt.
Well, I would say though too, but I'm saying, you know, as far as when you say you're guilty of something,
I think guilt is the recognition of the fault. I think shame is the effect of being guilty, right? Like, and the reason I say that is this: if you go 20 years without getting caught doing something in the shadows, and then all of a sudden it pops out, and you're found guilty, and then you feel ashamed. The shame is the effect of the guilt.
Well, I mean, like the one thing I read was like guilt is like I did something bad. Shame is I am bad.
Yeah.
Right. And they both can be at the same time or whatever too.
Yeah.
Okay. They can piggyback off each other. But I'm saying that their guilt is more about an action or inaction, and shame is more rooted into your identity, right? Like it's attacking who you are necessarily, right? And I think that's why in some ways they both lead to the same place.
Yeah.
You know, and they both get confused with each other, but there is a definite difference. Like in Genesis 3:10, when Adam hides,
yes,
that's definitely showing like I, you know, there's both there.
Right. Why, yeah. I mean, I ate from the tree. I'm guilty. Now I'm hiding because I'm ashamed of my guilty actions. Right. So, well, and I think that something here in our notes that kind of hits home for me is that shame isn't always tied to sin. Sometimes it's tied to wounds. brother, there's no truer case than for me. For many years, I didn't talk about my family background, the way I grew up. I was ashamed. I had so much shame about the fact that I grew up in the environment I grew up in and endured the things that I endured. And I didn't want people to know. I was like, I wanted to build this legacy of being this bulletproof individual. But honestly, man, it wasn't until I actually, the first time I ever really sat down and talked about it was in a group of people. I was actually asked to lead one session of a Bible study. And I don't know why, but it all just kind of came out as part of the study. And I was almost relieved of that shame. Like, I was like, well, because my thought was, if anybody knows that's what I went through, they're going to look at me that way for the rest of my life. I don't want to be felt sorry for. I don't want to be called, right? And after I came out and said it, I didn't have that. So those things weren't existent. So I think that's really something that people need to focus on, is especially Christian men, is your shame is not always tied to a sin. Sometimes your shame is tied to, you know, things that have happened to you in your past that were out of your control, and things that
your socioeconomic status that is kind of flipping made up anyway, but like, you know, that can get you caught up in stuff. If you look at somebody else or whatever, and you're just like, man, I know there's been times when I could have easily swirled down a shame hole. What I would call that is if, you know, when I've been to several things where it's like, you know, you are the poorest person in the room.
Yeah. Kind of that many times.
Right. And, you know, and that can be, if you really were predisposed to dwell on something like that, that would cause you to feel something. But, you know, it's also opportunity. I mean, how would I put this? Like, it just, there are so many different situations where it's not a sin thing. It's really just a situational or an injury, or like, for instance, I know a lot of the vets who come back who are injured and stuff, you know, they're not, they think they're not the man they were because of, like, they lost their leg or something like that. Now, some of them are brilliant at overcoming all that,
far more than the lost legs and limbs is the mental scars of war.
Right? I mean, the one that blows, that's kind of wrong. I'm not going to say that because that would totally be a wrong thing to say, but Jason Redman, the mm-hmm. guy who, like, his whole, you know, side of his face was just blown away. I mean, that dude's, his story is impressive, right? Yeah. And I mean, he had to go through a lot to get through. And shame was part of it. I mean, I think even when he was doing the Sean Ryan interview, that was, you could tell that was something he was had to go through some of that. Some of the other guys, I mean, dude, these are hard, tough dudes who have seen hell. Oh, and come back from
it. They've been as close to actual hell as a human can be.
Yeah. I mean, and been capable of some serious things, man. And if you look at those guys, and they have to deal with this stuff, it's every guy who has to deal with this stuff. Right. And that's what, dude, here's why we're the, let me just before we get into any more, why we're talking about this is because shame leads to some terrible places if it's not taken care of. It's
not addressed, yes.
Because it's going to impact everything in your life if you don't address it. Like, we're talking your marriage, you're talking your kids, you're even talking you. And we already know how many men aren't here anymore because they just
shame was too much.
It's a staggering number. So that's why we're talking about this.
Yeah.
Because, look, there's a lot of guys, and even guys we know, even ourselves, here's what I'm going to say. This is not just for those guys who have a problem. This is for every freaking guy.
Yeah.
Every guy has a point, or will have a point, or is having a point where there's a shame involved somehow. Yep. And knowing kind of how to look at it, how to address it. And it's not like we're here experts in the field and all this stuff and saying we've done this study, but we've
experienced it.
Yeah. We're just talking like normal dudes here to just see if we can connect with somebody here. Right.
Okay. Well, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
What does shame do to a man?
Really? I think inadequacy is probably the biggest thing I can think of off the top of my head. And one that I've experienced myself.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not good enough. I'm not this. I'm not that. And then it makes them withdraw from their family, their friends, everything. I've done that before. I know I have.
I have too.
But at the same token, that's really not what we're should be doing.
Well, there's a pretty specific point I want to make right now, and I want to talk to any women, wives, girlfriends, you know, mothers, perspective, whatever. There is a physical impact on men when you shame them. I have never seen a man become a better man by being shamed by his significant other.
Oh, no, never.
If anything, you will have an impact on him that far surpasses anger or emotion. It will affect him physically. There have been studies that have shown that things like ED can be directly connected to shame. Shame of, you know, sexual performance. That same, you know, a wife were to say something or a mate were to say something, hey, your sexual performance was terrible. Well, that's shaming someone, right? And that's not to say that you don't talk about things like that with your wife. I mean, you talk about that, right? There's things that you can talk about if you're open and you're honest and you're kind. But I'm going to warn you guys of something that I suffered for a long time because of what would be called in a technical term, a dire mother. When you are shamed so much, you go silent. And ladies, when your man goes silent and no longer responds to you, you may very well have lost him. We want to interact with, if there is any human on earth that we as husbands want to be able to interact with, it's our wives. But when you're in a situation where your wife, and my wife does not do this, to her credit, when you're in a situation with a spouse where that spouse is just hammering at you and constantly feeding you negatives and telling you that you didn't do a good job and that you're not doing this properly and that you're coming up short here and the balance is always in the negative, a man will shut down. Eventually he will just shut it off.
Yeah. I mean, cause when you slowly withdraw until you're just a cold.
Yeah.
You're just a cold individual.
You think your husband is cold because he's masculine? Hammer on him for a little while and let him turn inward. You'll really see a cold man at that point.
Yeah, I mean, it shame makes you hide from God, from church, from your friends, from your brothers, and then at least your wife. Which therefore then, actually, once you start doing that, it turns husbands into strangers.
Yeah.
And that's what happens. You know, especially with your wife. I mean, what's the term? Roommate marriage.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's not where you want to be.
And you know, one of the things that I laugh about this, but it's actually true. I was listening to, could be wrong, but I think it was Jordan Peterson, and he was talking about, you know, this new trend in marriages they're calling bedroom divorce, where they sleep in separate rooms because we can't stand to sleep each other. Jordan Peterson said that that's not a symptom of not being able to sleep in the same room. He goes, that's the first skid on the slippery slope to divorce. He goes, when you are no longer attracted to your spouse in a way that makes you want to connect with him in that way, where and be close to them, that's the first slippery step to divorce. And I hear a lot of people joke, oh, I got a bedroom divorce because he snores, or I got, no, no, you solve the problem. You don't separate, right? So dangerous. So dangerous.
The thing is, and then what do men do, man, when they get to this point, right? They self-medicate, right? Yeah. I mean, this is what I've seen countless times, whether it's they dive right into their work.
And or worse, they dive into pornography.
Have an affair. Get turned to alcohol or drugs or something. Yeah. I mean, it's just that's what. I mean, it does, man. So I guess what we're saying here is that really the signs of like a man who's dealing with some unchecked shame is really they're withdrawn, they're cold, seem to be just not emotionally absent kind of men. And they're having problems with some kind of substance or whatever. I mean, those are all key.
And I'll be honest with you, as someone who grew up in chaos and I dabbled in substance abuse in my younger years, none of that was for the betterment of me. It was all to hide. It was all to hide. The drinking, the drugs, the nightlife, all that stuff. That was a way to hide, right? That was never me really enjoying my life. That was me figuring out clever ways to hide from my life. So, you know,
I mean, here's the thing. So, being a dad too, what happens when you're dealing with that from a fatherhood's perspective? Well, then you become an absent father. You know, it turns you into a freaking ghost. Yep. Ghost, man. I mean, it's just not like that. But yeah. Here's what I wanted to say is Romans 8:1. There is no condemnation in Christ Jesus. So the only thing I'll say is that if the first, I mean, like the very first thing about any man who's going through some kind of shame thing, whatever it may be, less extreme, whatever. First thing is open the word.
Yeah.
And read Romans 8:1 and read it over and over and over again.
And confess.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that has to come before.
It doesn't have to be a confession open to the public, but confess to God.
Yes.
I'm ashamed. And tell him why, right? But you're right. Open. This really kind of touches home because I've talked to so many guys who are like, well, you know, I feel this way. Well, have you talked to your wife about it? Oh, no, I would never talk to her about
that. Yeah, I know.
Bro, then your relationship is not where it should be. If you're not confident enough in your spouse that you can't go to her and feel confident that you can tell her that something's wrong, you might need to go back and check the relationship, right?
Well, this is why we've said, you know, you don't just work on your marriage during the good times.
Yeah.
You do that so that when the bad times come around, there is not a question about what or if you can talk to your spouse about something. Like if you're working on your marriage and that's a priority for you and you're doing that often, right? And that's something that you've done. Then when there is something that's going on, it's not as big a hurdle to open up to your spouse.
Yeah.
So the one thing I would just definitely encourage men, even if you're not feeling like this at all right now, man, make sure your marriage is being worked on. Don't just assume everything is hunky dory and all that kind of stuff. I mean, you really need to work at your marriage all the time, even when it's good. I mean, it's just, that's what you need to do. You need to keep lifting each other up. You need to keep building each other. You need to keep, you know, just being a husband and wife, that's what you just always work on it because something will happen. It's going to, always does. We don't live a life full of just, you know, champagne and caviar here. I mean, this
we don't
no. No, unfortunately, Brian, we don't.
Dude, man, why you got to tell me that, man?
I know. Some of us don't even get pizza and beer all the time.
Sometimes I want to, you know.
But, you know, so.
So what you're saying is my unicorn's not real.
Yeah, okay. I'm afraid not, buddy.
All right, man.
So, but the other thing that we've said, too, that is important is you got to have other fellas in your life. Yeah,
you got to have wise counsel, man.
I mean, you know, a lot of our boomer generation now that's getting into that older age doesn't have anyone.
And I'm gonna say this out loud, and it's going to be crass, but I'm going to say it. You need men around you that will call you on your bullshit.
Yeah.
Because as men, what we do when we're around other men is we bluster. Well, I'll just eat a steak and, you know, punch a tree and everything will be okay. No, dude, you need friends around that will look at you and go, no, man, you're not okay. You're not okay. This is not okay for you to be where you're at, right? And I think that's another thing that we do as men is we make this mistake of believing that we can aggress them into being okay. No, man, we need to be willing to sit down and talk with people and be like, hey, man, you're not okay. We need to find out why, and we need to figure out how to get you some help for so that you will be okay. Because unlike every other man from the builder generation who, I just tamped it down. That's not healthy. That's not going to get you anywhere.
There's a point to like, hey, you're feeling some aggression, go get it out.
Yeah.
Okay, I get that. Get it out like on grabbing an axe and splitting some firewood kind of thing.
That's not what I go to the gym for, man.
But you need other fellas that you can trust and deeply trust, that's verifiably trustful.
Yeah.
That you can actually can say, look, man, I'm really dealing with this, man. I don't even know, you know, that's there's so much power in that when it works.
Yeah.
Now, here's what I'll say though. I know some men who have done this and it's not ended well because of some douche nozzle decided that they wanted to tell someone else some stuff and blah, blah, blah. If you want to torque me up, do that. When somebody confides in you and they're really hurting and they're going through something and then you turn around and gossip or something, mm-hmm. bro, you need to be just slapped in the face.
You're the worst.
I mean, at that point, no way. You want to know what's shallow?
Worse? Do you want to know what's worse than being ashamed, man?
Oh.
Being an untrustworthy man.
Yeah, don't do that.
That's even worse.
That causes so much damage in the body of the church, and it's really brutal. So anyway, but when you have guys that you have around, and this takes a while to develop. It's not like this is like. You know, you go to like a church service and poof, you have like a group of friends. Now, sometimes that happens if you just happen to click or whatever. But anyway, so the point there is that, you know, really having some guys that you can confess to. And if you want a Bible verse, James 5:16, look at that. Here's the other big one. Focus on the gospel. Focus on Christ, who he is, not who you are. Look to him because he bore your shame, bore your guilt on that cross. Don't just not assume it wasn't for you.
Don't try to recreate the situation that he's already cured.
Yeah, no. And plus all that, if you've accepted to walk with your cross, you've picked that up and you're following Christ, you're adopted. You're an adopted son of the creator of the freaking universe, dude. Come on, man.
You are a prince in the kingdom of God.
I mean, come on. So these are things you have to remind yourself with. And again, this takes opening up the daggone Bible, which a lot of guys don't seem to want to do. Your identity is rooted not in what you necessarily do, but who you are in Christ.
Yeah.
That's where you need to focus on your stuff. Because, I mean, if you want to look at Ephesians and say, you know, you're chosen, you're adopted, you're beloved, there you go. And he's looking at you how you are now and how you will be. You know, there's a whole thing. God just doesn't see you at the very moment you're in right now. He sees you from when you were a child into a baby all the way through until you go to meet him in the next life. That's where it is. And it's so key, man. I mean, and even your wife, right? I mean, if you're working on your marriage, your wife loves you unconditionally. You love your wife unconditionally. You have candid talks with your wife. You do explore different things that bother you or makes you happy, whatever. If you have that, if your marriage is you've worked on your marriage and you can say, babes, this is me, but you know, like, babes, I'm really struggling, blah, blah, blah. And you have a conversation. The last thing my wife will do is say, well, shame on you then, you know, no. My wife comes up, gives me a big hug. My wife tells me, you know, you got this, or, you know, it's not you. Look to She's a gospel woman, bro. That's what she does. Right. And that helps a shit ton. Right. I mean, that just does.
Yeah.
You know, if you were to drop your doing your 425 and you drop that weight on the floor, I'm going to tell you, you suck, bro.
Thanks, man.
No, I'm not going to tell you.
It's going to shame me. And by the way, I got up 4:30. That's what I'm talking about.
Beast, bro. Beast.
Then I got sick, man. I've been looking for lift all week long. Stupidness.
By the way, it rained a lot today, right? So After it rained, I got to get outside and flip the tire a little bit.
Yeah. And you flipped water all over yourself.
Oh my God, bro.
You were soaking wet windows. Oh my
God, man. And it was so heavy that the first one, it's always the first, because know. And I think it's even worse now, because it's like, I know the first one's going to be like the heaviest freaking thing on earth. The tire's filled with water. And I'm just like,
it's always the first set of anything. When I go to the gym, it doesn't matter the day.
Oh man.
It's the very first set. That's the hardest set. Even if it's the lightest set, it's still the hardest set.
I hear you.
Cause you're like, oh man, I'm tired. I'm gonna work all day. I don't know if I want to lift or not. And then you get that first set in and you're like, man, that was a really hard set. And then you go to the next set and you're like, oh, well, that's a whole lot easier. But it's always that first touch, that first set, that first rep that just gets you.
And you know what I know we're getting off on a tangent here.
It's okay.
I am not motivated to do this every day. Let me just say this right now. I do not want to do this every day. I make myself do this every day because I know what it's doing.
Yeah. Motivation's a lie.
Yeah.
Motivation's the biggest lie sold in the world.
What you've already talked about, because I extremely, like, even this week was really, really, really bad. Like Monday was successful. Tuesday I had to work a long day. And then Julie was sick of, I don't remember what happened, but anyway, it was like, I had to take the girls to Taekwondo, so I didn't get a workout. And then Wednesday, I forgot what happened, but then I was like, I think Wednesday I was just like, no, I'm not doing it. You know, it was just one of those where I just said, no, I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
You know, but then Thursday I'm like, no, I've missed 2 days. I'm not doing that again. I know I need to do this. And then I get up and I do it, and it, okay, cool. And then just today it's like all raining and I'm like secretly, you know, thinking, yes, it's going to be raining all hard all day. And then it didn't. And as soon as it stopped, I'm like, I have no excuses. I have none. I'm not taking a work call. I'm not doing anything. No, I'm not going to use an excuse to get out of it today. And I did. And I feel, you know, it's fine. Right.
Yeah.
But there's part of shame in that too. I mean, like when you miss a workout or something, you kind of shame yourself and saying, why you so weak, or you know,
well, I follow the 5-day rule. Like when I got really sick Monday, like throw up, diarrhea, crazy sick. And you're supposed to wait, after you have something like that, you're supposed to wait 5 days. Which has been miserable.
Yeah.
but I'm going back at it tomorrow. So, but there is shame, because you're like, well, I could be doing more. I could be stronger. Me being lazy. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You know, all right. So let's talk about, we've talked about shame in marriage. Let's talk about shame in fatherhood, because there's some real weight there.
Dude. Yeah. As we said, that, you know, you'll turn into a ghost.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I heard this I heard this, and I don't know who said it. I heard it on an Instagram reel, but it said every father wants the same thing. They want more time, but they also want more money. They want more love, but they also want to be more disciplined. It's a constant tug of war as a father. Like my youngest boy got baptized today and I didn't get to be there for it. And that really, I'm so happy for him in so many ways that I can't even communicate. But at the same time, I'm so sad that I missed it. But, you know, I fight with that because I wanted to be there. I wanted to see it happen, but then I got the video, so I did get to see it happen. But there's this just, we fight. We are responsible for so much. We are responsible for caring for our kids financially, but also caring for our kids emotionally and spiritually. If you are truly a man who wants to lead your family, you are responsible in every aspect of what that means. Like there's no gap in that. Right.
Right.
And you have to make a lot of hard decisions and you have to carry a lot of heartache and you have to help others in your family carry their heartaches and try to help them find a way to heal. And let's be clear, man. Being, you know, a lot of guys, I'll hear a lot of guys say this. Oh man, dad and husband's just real easy. No, it is not.
You're doing it wrong then.
It is a 24/7 worry fest. You love your kids. You worry about them. You pray for them. You have the highest hopes and aspirations for them, but you don't want to drown them in that. You want to give them enough room to be their own people, and pave a little bit of their own road. And you know, the only real thing I ever really want for my kids is to be better than I was, to whatever degree that was. And it's not because I was a terrible person, but you want to see your children succeed, right? So that being said, you know, there's shame in, you know, I know a lot of parents who have a kid that's taken that wayward road and is struggling with addiction or other things and has been in legal trouble. There's a lot of shame for a father in that, right? There's a lot of shame. And one of the things that, and I'm very guilty of this in the beginning, is being that pendulum parent, mad, glad, sad, happy, you know, bam, like every hour it's changing, right? And it took me actually realizing I'm killing my example for my kids by being that way. I'm killing my example for my kids. I'm going to make them miserable adults if I keep doing this.
Well, okay, let's just be real for a minute.
Okay.
We all will damage our kids.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Let's just throw it out there. Just say no one goes through being a parent without doing something wrong and damaging your kids in some way. Not severe. We're not talking, you know, abusive or anything. I'm just saying we are going to screw up. We are not perfect. You're going to do something wrong. You're going to overcorrect something. You're going to do not enough. You're going to do whatever. You are not going to be perfect. You are going to screw it up. You must first accept the fact that you will screw this up in some way first. And that's okay, because you're not made to be a perfect dad.
That's part of it, unfortunately.
Yeah.
There's no escaping it.
There's none. It's like saying, well, you're petrified by the thought of death. Well, I hate to tell you this, but
we're all going to die.
It happens. I mean, you cannot stop that. Right. So anyway, I think this goes back, and I'm going to say this too on this matter, your the way you parent as a dad, father, comes from how you are as a man. If you have not given time into building and molding and you know, chipping away at your manhood, of who you are as a man, you're not going to fulfill the fatherhood role successfully, right?
Yep.
So if you got to take time to make sure you're being the man you are really looking for, and for us, the way the Bible says for us to be as men, you're not going to be a good father unless you're a good man.
Yeah.
Okay. That's just my opinion on that. Look, you can disagree, not, I don't care. But
yeah,
work on that stuff now.
But let's also be clear too. Don't be a nice guy. Be a good man.
There's a difference.
There's a big difference between those two things.
Because
nice guys let their kids do stupid stuff. Nice guys want to be friends with their kids. Nice guys want to, oh, it's, you know, let him, though he's, talk back. It's just his personality. Good men raise good kids, right? That's the way it works. Like, be a stern, know when discipline is right and right to use. Know when you need to have those conversations that are a little bit deeper than the normal conversation. Know when to reset the expectation if they've lost their way. You have to know how to do these things, but you also need to know the currency of your kids. Like, not every kid responds to being yelled at. Not every kid responds to being spanked. Not every kid responds to, grounding. You need to know where your kid's currency is, and you need to know where to take that currency from them. And sometimes, like my oldest son, it's his social life. If you take away his social life, man, that's a train wreck for him. You know, my youngest son, if you take away his freedoms, I want to go to the park. I want to go to the gym. I want to go. No, you're done. You screwed up. You can't. That you got to know your kid's currency, right? Because if you know their currency, you'll know how to control the transaction without being painted as some overbearing aggressor. So
the thing is, we're not supposed to provoke our kids to anger either.
No, we are not.
Okay. Now that might happen because you disciplined them and they don't. Something, but Ephesians 6:4 does say we're not to provoke our kids.
Do not exasperate your children.
But here's the thing. we must understand that you're gonna mess up. And if you're feeling this, if really there's a shame problem where you've had something really eat at you, there's you're either gonna go one or two ways. You're going to withdraw completely and be absent, or you're going to be overkill.
Yeah.
And both of those are equally as bad.
Yep.
Right? Now, another aspect of this that I've thought about is trying to break that we're so afraid of repeating our own father's mistakes. We're trying to break that cycle, right? And it's like you're just so afraid to do that. Sometimes that leads you to not do some things maybe you should, or do some things where you shouldn't, right? Because you're caught up into this. Especially if you've had a bad experience with your dad, you know.
Well, I can say that, and then my dad watches this, so I'm sorry, Dad. I'm going to spill our beans. My dad wasn't really around a lot when I was a kid, so I was brought up by my grandfather, who was an alcoholic, and I called him he was the definitive version of someone who needed anger management. But he was brought up by a very angry, aggressive. So for a long time as a young man, that's who I was. I'm a guy right now where the animal's locked away. I'll let him loose if you need me to, but I keep him locked away because more often than not, if he's out, he's not doing anybody any good. But there for a long time, I let the animal roam. I didn't care. I didn't care what it brought. I didn't care what price it cost me. I didn't care. And then you run into these situations where, you know, you haven't. Okay, so here's the best way to say it. When a father is deeply involved in his children's life in a healthy way, they are 10 times less likely to become obese, 10 times less likely to become a criminal, 10 times less likely to be in the lower income bracket, all because the father is involved in a healthy way. Those are just statistics, man. They're you can't beat them. They're just statistics. It's the truth. Single parent homes where the father is more involved than the mother, kids are far less likely to fail in school. Kids are far less likely to. Now that's not an insult to moms. It's just a giant spotlight on how important it is to be involved with your kids and be a good, level-headed, faith-driven father, right? There's a lot of times, man, where I have not known what to do with my kids, but I had to pray. I was like, God, I don't know what to do in this situation. You're going to have to help me. You know, sometimes you have to, the biggest way to avoid shame that a lot of times is to admit that you don't know. Just say, I don't know. I've told my wife so many times, she'll ask me a question. We will hit a situation with the kids that we've never hit. And she'll go, what do we do? I don't know. We're going to have to pray about it. Talk to some people, see what's up. But right.
You're not. Okay, I think one of the key thing here is you're not trying to lead your family to perfection.
No,
you're trying exist. To you're leading them to grace.
Yeah,
and that's you look that when I read that I was just like, well, you know what, man, that's pretty spot on. I'm leading them to understand what the gospel is, that you know they are unique creations of the one who's created everything, that, you know, I'm going to screw up, but it'll be okay. Cause you know, I love you more than anything in the whole flipping world. You will not understand that until you're a parent yourself kind of thing. You know,
I never understood. I didn't understand what real selfless sacrificial love was until I had kids. Right. Like, when you're married and you don't have kids, you're kind of selfish. You just do whatever you want to do. But when the kids come along, man, you really realize the things that you have to sacrifice, and you do it willingly. But, you know, one of the things I tell a lot of guys, and again, I struggled with this, and I tell them now when I ask them about it, I have some people that have had kids and they said, well, what do I do? The kind of father you are will determine what kind of man your daughter winds up with.
Yep.
And the kind of father you are determines how your sons will treat their spouses.
Correct.
So you really need to keep, a close eye on how you treat the people around you as a man, because your children will model that behavior in their relationships. And that is a very scary thought for the wrong situation, right? If you're quick to anger and yell, and then your daughters will find a man that way. If you're quick to anger and yell, your sons will become that man. You must understand how important your engagement with your spouse is. You must understand how important your engagement with other people are. The way you engage people in public is the way your kids will engage people in public. And that's on the soft side or the hard side. It goes either way. But you know, one of the things I'll say, you know, it's okay to tell your kids when you've made a mistake.
You got to.
Yeah. I think a lot of the shame that comes from parents is we don't, well, I'm the parent. If I tell them I made a mistake, then they'll know I'm fallible. Well, God's my father, and he knows I'm fallible. Why am I worried about my kids knowing I'm fallible?
Dude, I've apologized to both my girls at, we're talking, I don't know, 6, 7 years old. I mean, you know, I've done it a couple times.
I've had to apologize to my son several times.
I can't even tell. I can't even tell you because I do. I'm like, I'll be a little too, like, I'll be irritated at something. It's something else is going on, or I'm in pain and I overreact to something.
Yeah. And you don't realize you're doing it until you've done it.
I did. You know, I'm like, why did I just yell at my, that was what?
Yeah.
And then I have to go back and I'd be like, and I go, sweetheart, I should not have done that. I'm so sorry. You didn't deserve that. That was not what it was supposed to be.
Yeah.
Now, thankfully, I'm not an abusive guy, so there's that. But
no.
But yeah. Anyway, being a little bit of, you know, showing that because your leadership in your home doesn't, it's not necessarily a totalitarian type of a thing and a dictatorship. Type
well,
of
but thing here's or whatever. The thing too.
It's yeah, you are the last stop. Don't get me wrong.
But if you think that intimidation,
yeah,
or aggression is the way to lead your family, then you're not a man. You're not a man. I'm sorry. But if you need to physically intimidate or aggress your spouse and your children, you checked your manhood at the door when you got home, because men don't do that. Men don't hit their wives. Men don't scream at their wives. Men don't beat their kids. Men don't do that. Weak men do that. But men, good men, do not participate in that behavior.
Here's the thing. We'll wrap it up a little bit here. Here's the points I've listed. Shame isolates, grace restores.
Yes.
Right? You lead your family best when you're leading from your identity in Christ. If you're rooting yourself into the gospel, that's where you lead it from, not from anywhere other where. That's it. And, you know, you need to spend time talking to God. You need to spend time talking to your wife. You need to spend time talking to your men that you have close to you. That is a must. Look, it's hard enough as it is. Like, the last thing you want to do is be an isolationist and think that you got it covered, because you don't. Because at the end of the day, your family doesn't need a perfect man. They need a present man.
Fully secure in Christ.
There you go.
That's right.
And look, whether it's shame, guilt, some kind of pain, whatever the case may be, you know, that's not just you hurting. You are going to affect your family's, your wife, your children's identity,
your legacy, those
things. You're going to impact that kind of thing of who they are. And that's not what you want to do, man. I mean, those are the wrong characteristics to be, you know, endowing your kids with. Right.
I think a good way to look at it is love your family like you would want them to love other people.
Right.
Don't love them like you want them to love you. Love them like you would want them to love other people.
Right. So if I would say too, if like there's lots of good Christian counseling stuff too, don't be afraid of that either. I know a lot of guys who are so anti, and I get it. Cause like, if you've been to, there are some secular psychiatrists who really don't do a good job. I mean, but who, there's no profession that's absolutely perfect. Come on now.
There's not.
That doesn't mean that it isn't. So, I mean, you know, that's there. Don't be afraid of that. Listen to some testimonies of other men though, man. I mean, there, you know, we live in 2025 where you can go on freaking YouTube and find all kinds of daggone stories of men just laying it all out there about what they've done and what they've gone into and everything else. I mean, you're not alone in what you feel or anything or what you're going through. But open up the Bible, man. I mean, look, read it. I mean, it'll guide you in the right spot and root your daggone self into the identity of Christ.
Go to the book of David and read. What was David? An adulterer, a murderer.
Yeah.
But he was a man of God's own heart, because David was the ultimate example of, you can make mistakes and still be a man of God. Right? Like, I can't even begin to, like, people laugh when I say that, but I'm like, you don't understand, man. If you read the entire story of David, it is a twisting, turning horror show at times of bad judgment, bad. But at the end of the day, he was a man of God's own heart. And that's what really, really I would tell any of you is, and I am going to send something out. look, as somebody who knows and has talked to a lot of veterans and listened to them talk, a news flash just came across my phone that 51 casualties so far in Iran's bombing of Israel. It's probably mostly innocents. So I would encourage you, if you're watching our podcast and you're listening to us, and take time tonight to pray. I said it in the beginning of the podcast, but I'm going to say it again. War is sometimes necessary, but there are a lot of innocent people that are going to die because of this. And regardless of how I feel biblically about the conflict in the Middle East, I will never feel good about innocent people dying.
Well, no.
So I would ask our viewers who are people of faith to stop and pray for the families of those people, for the losses of life, for the decisions that are going to have to be made between these two countries in order to even find the possibility of having any kind of peace talks. Just keep them in your prayers, man. That I don't know why this has hit me so hard. I don't know if it's because I'm a little older and I'm a little more contemplative about how I think, but just pray, man. Pray for these people that are going to be caught in the crossfire, because there's going to be a lot of them.
And also, too, there's all kinds of talks and all this stuff about further rioting and all this kind of stuff. This is not the way.
Yeah.
That is not the way. You don't prove your point by burning
people's businesses down
in cars and causing havoc and attacking anybody. That is not the way.
And for all of you law enforcement guys out there and first responders and, I don't know, you and I haven't talked about this, but I support you 100% for being out there and trying to defend the innocent losses that happen during ridiculous behavior like this. And nobody else might tell you they appreciate you, but I'll tell you, I appreciate all of you for what you do every day.
Yep.
Because if it wasn't for you, this would be a lot less safe place to live. Those first responders and those police officers and ICE officers and all those military and National Guard out there, man, I'm praying for you guys to come home safe and with minimal injury at best. So, I don't know. That's it, right? I think we're at the end. Guys, I'm Brian.
I'm Reggie.
See ya.
Bye-bye.